Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. It is March 6th at 8:15 a.m., and we have a quorum, and so we're going to start our meeting today. First of all, Representative Ryer, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the last meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have, and I recommend them for approval.
We have a motion for approval. Everyone say aye for approval.
Aye.
Thank you. The minutes have been approved. Oh, I'm pretty heavy-handed, aren't I?
That gavel will do to you, Madam Chair.
Today's a great special day. There's no bills up to talk about, but we're going to talk about the discussion of presentation on social districts. You may have been hearing about it. There's a couple of bills that have been dropped about social districts, and we do have some successes to talk about. So today is to start the discussion, start the conversation among Commerce, because it will come this way eventually, and we have some professionals or some experts or some firsthand experiences from Anoka, which we'll have. So again, we're just going to have a great conversation today, and our two individuals at the testifier tables, everyone knows Representative Stevenson, and then we have his Mayor Eric Skoquist. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Rep, you have no choice in it, so thank you for being here. We're going to start with the conversation with the two at the testifying table. So thank you, and please, this is a two-way dialogue. Let's talk about it. We don't want to walk away with any unanswered questions about social districts. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's great to have a day here to talk about one of my two favorite subjects, Anoka, the other's Coon Rapids. Anoka is, of course, the Halloween capital of the world, a great city that's older than the state of Minnesota and home to the first volunteers for the Union Army in the Civil War. There's your fun trivia facts for the day. You're welcome. We are also home to the very first social district in Minnesota, which we created as part of the liquor bill in 2022, where we also freed the growler. And did many other fine things. I'm going to talk for just a little bit about what happened in 2022, and then the mayor is going to talk about the experience that we've had in Anoka since passage of the bill. So Anoka, as I mentioned, is a historic community, and we have a great historic downtown in Anoka filled with a lot of fantastic bars and restaurants and a vibrant nightlife scene there. It's a great place to spend an afternoon or evening walking around shopping. It's been, I think, a priority for the mayor and myself to see that downtown continue to grow and prosper. And a few years ago, we were talking about this, and the mayor suggested to me that he had done some research on this concept of social districts that exist in other states. And a social district is essentially an area where you can purchase an alcoholic beverage from one establishment and carry it with you as you walk between establishments or just enjoy the outdoors. Downtown Anoka seemed to me to be a perfect spot to try this out in Minnesota, because there's a good concentration of those establishments. It's a very walkable area, historic downtown that we're trying to promote and revitalize. So we included it as a pilot project in the 2022 liquor bill. And also required that after 2 years of operation of the social district, that Anoka would report back to the legislature on what they had found, what they had experienced, how we could make this work even better, potentially for other communities. This summer will be the second full summer with the social district, so at the end of the summer is when we'll get the report. But the early experience with the social district has been so positive that actually last year we did add two more social districts, one in Shakopee and one in Stillwater, that will come online after the report issues this fall. So Shakopee and Stillwater will have social districts, but they'll be able to benefit from all of the experience that Anoka has had. And of course, as we look forward, there's discussion about bringing this to other communities around the state, which I think is inevitable. You know, I'd love for it to just be an Anoka thing, and for you all to come to Anoka all the time to enjoy our community, but we recognize that eventually some other communities around the state, I guess, will have them. reluctantly. But we do want to talk about how to do that in a way that makes them successful, that keeps them unique, and also learns from some of the experiences that we've had in Anoka, because we have learned a lot, I think, in these first few years. So with that, Madam Chair, I would turn things over to Mayor Skolquist. There is a presentation. I don't know if the monitors don't appear to be on right now, but I've got plugged in.
Thank you, Rep. Stevenson. We do have it up. So, Mayor, please let us hear your presentation and inform us of how the successes were for you.
Wonderful. Well, first of all, Madam Chair, thank you for the invitation to attend here today and kind of educate you a little bit about this this concept that we've had introduced here in Minnesota and get to pump up my city a little bit at the same time. So with that, you'll see on the screen just kind of an introductory here of the PowerPoint. But one thing I'd like to add to what Representative Stevenson spoke about here is this. If you see some of the pictures, these were taken at our ribbon cutting kind of kickoff event, as he mentioned. So that occurred in September of 2023. Some of the logic being, I think when the law was established to allow this, it was basically providing the parameters for the social district and then allowed a lot of local control and kind of enabling ordinances to be created that are customized to each city. So each city can kind of do what they think is appropriate for them within the bounds of specific things laid out in the law. And I can get into those in a little bit here. But what we did is we decided, you know, we're going to do this right. We're going to take it slow. We're going to look at other cities and other states that have done this. Many of them started to create these types of laws in the COVID pandemic era when there was a lot of need for outdoor spaces to be able to do things. North Carolina, I think, was maybe one of the states we looked at the legislation to kind of copy. But the nearest one to here is the state of Michigan. They also have these in various areas, and you'll look, you can go on their state websites, and there may be one county with nothing in it, maybe one, other ones with multiple. So it allows those local jurisdictions to have some say. But at that kickoff event, it was very well attended. There was a lot of press around that because this was a new concept. But in Anoka, we are home to many events and activities. Representative Stevenson said Halloween, that's a big one for us. But we also have one of the three big food truck festivals in the metro area, lots of arts and cultural events and things like that. So it made sense to do something along these lines. At that event, Representative Stevenson was there, Senator Abler was there as well as many representatives from local business community, our city staff, appointed officials, Chamber of Commerce folks. And overall, it went over really well. We had a lot of music, the social district cups and things like that. So with that, we can move to the next slide. So as part of the legislation, some of the guidelines were having to have certain specific things, one of which was very clear delineated boundaries of where this was to occur, as well as very clear signage to people that are in this district that can look around and can know what are some of the rules, where can I go. So the city looked at other examples from other places, and these are examples of a few of the signs that we have within our social district. It shows on the map where the district is, as well as some general rules. You see on the left, it mentions please drink responsibly. I think that's one of the language parts that was in the bill to make sure that we say those things very clearly, B21, that type of stuff. So that is when you're entering the district, the one on the right, very similar, but when you're exiting the district, saying no alcohol is allowed beyond this point, as well as QR codes and things like that, where if people want to learn more and see more of the details, they can go very easily to the website. Next slide, please.
Mayor Skolquist, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Please? You have hashtags at the bottom of your signs. What does that hashtag take an individual to?
QR code. No, that's fine.
I'm old school.
So that will take you to our city website. That's another part of this. We have to have all of this stuff put on a very open website. So that's a really easy way for people to just say, you want to learn more than just what's written on this sign? Go here. It will give you a lot more detail, a lot more parameters, things like that. And then that stuff, you know, we usually don't change things in the middle of the cycle, but if we had a change or if we had an update, then that's live versus these signs we put out, you know, at the beginning of the year. It's really not great to have to move them and change them and all that type of stuff. But one of the things also that it's important I should probably mention is we've been trying to make sure that our rules and guidelines are very clear, easy to understand, and we're trying not to change stuff mid-cycle as much as we can. because the important thing here with this is just consistency. People, when they have experiences, if they visited other states, every state is a little different. Some people say, oh, you go on the Strip in Vegas, and it's one way, or you go to Beale Street in Memphis, it's another way. And then here, we have specific guidelines and rules regarding the district, hours of operation, certain times during the year, all that type of stuff. So we want to make sure it's very open and clear to people, and that's just one of the ways we try to do that. All right, are we on the third slide? Okay, well, no, that's fine.
Yeah, I can go.
Yeah, right. If you go back to that. All these ones, very similar, but we have a little bit of variation. This one just has more specific rules laid out on the actual thing. We don't want to overburden people with very long things when they're going through, because if there's too many words, they're not going to read any of them. So we have different ways to do that. But anyway, that's just another example here.
Mr. Mayor?
Certainly.
We have a question from one of our members. Representative Finke, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to be clear. Are these currently posted signs?
Correct.
How big
Correct.
Are they?
We may, I'll say this. We may have taken them down because the way we do it right now is we're seasonal, the way we've operated them, so it wouldn't start up again here until the spring. So I think we probably pulled most of them down during the winter times when it's not in operation, and then we're going to update those and whatnot as we go forward.
Representative Finke, follow up?
Yeah, how large are they?
Mayor?
Yeah,
Sunquist.
So I don't have the exact dimensions, but I'm going to guess 12 by 18, some of them that are on a post. We also have some sandwich boards out that are, you know, the sandwich board size. So those are probably more like 2 by 3 or something along those lines.
Representative Finke?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Could please continue?
Thank you. So here you'll see an example of some, and I brought you all gifts. So if you see here on the left, so this is a social district cup. On this cup, we have a few various sizes of these for the various businesses. There's specific things that are on here that were made to be on here by the legislation. It has to have our logo or some identifier. Drink responsibly, be 21. And then on the back, social district area for the license number of the establishment, those types of things. And so the way that we operate in the city of Anoka here is the city of Anoka is the one that issues the social district license. It's a specific license we give. We don't charge much extra. I think it's $25 on top of establishments that already have to have their liquor license. So we want to make it very easy for entry, just enough to cover a really base expense for us to review that. In addition to that, if you're going to be part of that, you need to serve in a specific cup. And so the way that it operates is the city of Anoka has purchased a bunch of these cups. Any establishments that want them purchases the cup from the city. There's two reasons we have it that way. One is it helps control that we know who's buying them, how many are out there. People aren't making their own and not covering these expenses. The other part is by buying this, part of the 50-cent fee we currently have right now goes to cover the cost of the cup, but also then there is a surcharge that goes into a social district fund the city has. And we utilize that revenue to be able to do things in the district, to be able to do extra maintenance, maybe pay extra patrols if we need those types of things. And the goal for that being, as we start to establish some of that revenue, working with the downtown business owners to say, okay, what should we utilize this for? What are the best needs for the community? What are you seeing? What are we seeing? So anyway, with that, you can enjoy your little souvenir.
Mayor Skolquist?
Yeah.
We have a question from the mayor, from one of our members, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's probably more directed, the first part, to Representative Stevenson. And then I do have a follow-up for the mayor. Representative Stevenson, now that everyone is in possession of one of these cups, please assure the committee members that this is worth $5 or less, so we don't have any statutory or compliance issues.
Well,
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Stevenson, I was laughing at the joke.
No, yeah, me too. Representative O'Driscoll, as I think you just heard the mayor say, it's 50 cents.
Thank you.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mayor, and on all seriousness, because you have these cups, I've been in communities that have had other festivals and things where they have like an annual commemorative cup or buy this for the season and it gets you, you know, discounts or different kinds of things. First, is that something that's permissible? And then secondly, have you contemplated that? And if you are doing something like that, what are your experiences in enforcement and attracting patrons to the social district? I realize a lot of questions there, but
sure.
Mayor Skolkas?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So, yeah, we kind of contemplated what are the best ways to utilize this and to do things. And so we started out saying this is a concept we're going to try and utilize. And part of the reason for that was, you know, there's concern of, okay, what is the expense to get this started? What are those costs? All these unknowns that you can ask when you're, you know, I spoke with different members of, more specifically Michigan, just because that's more close to us. It's a little bit culturally more similar than if you're going to some other spot around the country. And to see what kind of concerns there were, what other fees and things that they have to cover. So the way that we talked about is we're going to start with this because it's a lot easier way for the city to kind of control this as we move forward. We know how many cups are out there. We know how they're going to be utilized, and there's a certain source of revenue. By doing a kind of a here's your cup and you can go for refills and those types of things, that's one option, but it's a lot harder for us to verify certain things. You know, how many are we actually getting the fees that we're supposed to? Are we controlling who's getting those cups, those types of things? And not that we thought that that would be an issue, but I think our general philosophy has been let's do baby steps with this. Let's try to understand things before we move forward. And so I think that's a possibility in the future. You know, one of the things that's been brought up is, I mean, it's great to have this cup, but, you know, are they one-time use? Are they going to have to be recycled? Are they really all recycled? Those types of questions, you know, what's a more sustainable, efficient way to do that? So I think as we kind of go through this experiment, we're going to look at more of that and say, okay, what are some ways we can adapt that? But for now, that was sort of the first step in the process to try to figure this out and have a little bit more control and understanding of how this was going to look, kind of roll out. And I apologize that there was a lot of questions. Did I miss any of them that you had? Okay.
Thank you, Mayor Skolkas. I do have a question regarding the walking around with the cups. What would happen when someone went outside the boundaries of the social district and they were holding the beverage in their hands?
Yeah, so we kind of always have had an approach in Anoka on a lot of stuff of use certain things like that as an educational tool to help educate folks. And that's sort of what the way we've done that here. Obviously, we can do enforcement if we really need to, if somebody becomes a problem or something becomes a problem. But it's been pretty minimal at this point. And when it does happen, a lot of times it's just simply, hey, you know, you need to go back within the district or you need to pour that out. Those types of simple reminders from either law enforcement that are in the area or just people in general. It's been great. A lot of our establishments and our bars and restaurants and others have been really helpful in educating people as they're purchasing things. And so that's generally how it's been at this point. We do have other events and things that are outside of this district. We have a classic car show on Saturdays. Usually that's, you know, a couple thousand people like to show up to that. That is not in the specific district. It is outside of it. And they've had long established rules. They don't want alcohol in that event and whatnot. And so we've kind of kept that separate. But because they butt up to each other, there's times that we need to educate. We need to add other signage, that type of stuff. So that's how it's worked so far, and it really haven't been any major issue. One thing I will add is in our district, in our historic downtown, if you've been to Anoka, there's kind of two halves. Our main street runs through the middle, and it's a busier main street. It's not a little kind of small one. And so there's a lot of traffic and whatnot. So our very first year, we said, we're going to do the social district just on the north side, where a lot more of our entertainment district is, our city park, those types of things. And so what happened is the second year, there was a demand for businesses on the south side of Main Street to say, hey, we would really like it expanded so people can come here. And it wasn't that it was bar and restaurants that were asking for that. It was clothing stores. It was, you know, antique shops, those types of things where they say, we want people to experience the whole downtown. And so the way we have it right now is basically our older historic core downtown is our district. And part of that is because it's kind of a mental delineation for people to say, all right, I'm done with these buildings. Now I'm going to more of a residential zone or whatnot. And they just kind of know, stay within that zone. That's where we put the signage. And for the most part, that works out pretty well.
We have another question from Representative Dossett. Representative Dossett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question I have is, have you had any challenges with some of the businesses that are, I'll just say, more family-friendly? Have they had any concern about this?
Yeah, so it's been good. We just actually had a meeting, I think it was last week actually, with kind of our downtown businesses that we wanted to attend. Some of them were residents, some were bar and restaurants, some were the ice cream store and things like that. And so we've had kind of had discussions. How are things going? Is there things we need to change? One of the other things we have had in Anoka prior to this is we call it like parklets, kind of the outdoor seating in the parking spaces in front of your area. Not just bar and restaurants use that, but as I mentioned, the ice cream shop is one of those where they have that as well. And so there's concerns brought up that says, hey, people, we're right at the edge of the district. People will come sometimes and will sit on our patio, finish their beverage, and, you know, the 16-year-old that's working there, you know, gets a little intimidated to ask somebody, say, hey, you know, could you move on or whatnot? So it happens occasionally, but we're very, very good about trying to be very responsive. So if you, we just say, you know, it seems odd, and people have been trained not to call 911, but we always say, call that, because it's a good way for them to sort of triage and say, let the local law enforcement people know. They'll just come down there, they'll do the friendly reminder, and it's been very few and far between at most places. Another thing, and I can get to it here in a little bit, maybe we'll skip here ahead. We can always come back to this. This is just about the cups I had talked about, some of the finance. I can go back to this. But if you go to the next slide, Representative Stevenson, excuse me. One of the things we provide as the city is these three things, or window clings. Any business within that social district can get one of these, and it's a good visual cue for people. So the first one on the left here is a green one. It says drinks welcome. It kind of refers to some of those businesses you were talking about, where if you're not an establishment that sells these, but you're okay with people socializing, sipping and strolling and coming around, you can get this window cling, and some of them will put it in their window. So interestingly enough, some of the early adopters of this that were very excited were, as I mentioned, quilt shops, antique stores, all these other things where you wouldn't necessarily associate folks with, I'm going to take a beverage and go into them. But those people really like that. So many include that. The one in the middle that's more that maroon color, that just goes on the businesses that are selling them, that selling these social district cups, which at this point is basically every licensed alcohol establishment in our downtown. And the third one on the right is no drinks permitted. And it's red. And some of the stops that say, you know what, we don't want people coming by that have these. We prefer not to go there. They stick and stick those on the outside. And so that's been a very good way for us to kind of regulate that. And where these businesses that say, you know what, I just don't want them at my establishment for whatever reason. I don't want somebody to spill something on the floor, or all of that. They're allowed to have those as well. And that's been a very effective tool to allow people to go into the establishments that want them and to keep it away without having a confrontational situation.
Mayor, Representative Dossef, do you have a follow-up? I'm sorry, I've cut you off, Representative.
I was going to say, Mayor, do you want to talk about how when we initially premiered this, some of the bars and restaurants in the original social district were reluctant and didn't participate, but
sure.
Then...
Yeah, and that was maybe getting into your question, is because this is a new concept. People didn't know, they didn't all understand how this would work. And so kind of the original rollout, and I can't remember out of the 11 licensed establishments we have today how many it was. I want to say it was maybe 6 or 7 that had it to start with. And some of the others just kind of said, you know, we're going to sit back and wait to see how this goes. And so what ended up occurring after that first September, when we followed up the next year, all the establishments said, you know what, we see how it works. We want one. There really hasn't been major concerns. We have a lot of customers asking for these types of things. And so that's something that we've kind of been expanding based on the desire and the need of some of the businesses down there.
Representative Dossef, follow up.
Just a brief follow up. How many what does enforcement look like, and how many incidents of enforcement have you had to apply?
Mayor Skolquist.
Thank you very much. Enforcement basically looks like we will have, we don't usually have regular patrols walking around down there all the time. But based on the nature of our town and how things work, there are times where we just have officers that are kind of in that area, especially later in the evening. What we have done is in the city of Anoka, we have set a time limit of 10 to 10. Not that we expect people going out at 10 in the morning to utilize this, sometimes maybe with a Bloody Mary or something, but it was just an easy way to sell people 10 o'clock. Think about that in your brain. That has been the hours that we've had our patios on public spaces open over time as well. So try to make it very simple for people to understand. So that's one way that we've helped with enforcement, is just making the rules as clear as we can. Another thing has been working with these the bar and restaurants that have these licenses to be able to help educate people and just tell them as they're purchasing, this is how this operates, this is how this works. And some of them just say, you know, we have to do that a lot just because there's a lot of new people that have come into town to kind of experience the city and utilize this as kind of a way to do that. As far as any other enforcement with law enforcement, I don't believe I've heard of any incidences other than those simple reminders that I was talking about. And so when 10 o'clock happens in the city of Anoka, that is a time where we say, okay, the public realm of these types of things, we're not gonna have this anymore. And that started, you know, years ago. We didn't want loud outdoor things going on in the street after 10 o'clock, because it's kind of when our noise ordinances and things start to kick in. And so that's another way that we've kind of tried to establish it and limit any friction that might occur.
Follow up, Representative Dosa?
Nope.
Thank you. We have two more members that would like to ask some questions. The first member will be Representative Hewitt and then Representative Van Vinsbergen. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And either one of you could probably take this question, just curiosity. It looks like the zone is in a riverfront park, probably a local community park. And I know that you guys have events up there. I believe the Halloween Fest, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if you do this, but I know my own town does something during their yearly festival that allows, like, the Lions Club or the veterans to sell beer in that area. Did you run into any opposition or any problems with your charity groups that do something like that, or maybe you don't have a charity group?
Oh, that's a very good question. And to answer that specifically, what we do is we have, historically, we've had special events, and we have a special event type of permit set up. So when this type of thing was allowed before, but it was only under the guise of one-day permits for the most part. So we'd shut off an area, we'd have a certain zone, and then people would be responsible for that zone. So one of the examples I'll give you here is on Wednesdays we have a concert in the park series. That occurs right down here in that riverfront park you were explaining. And what we've done for that is we allow the local Lions Club, who does a lot of things, you know, the fairgrounds and other different events. This is kind of one of the things that they do to raise revenue for their different things. And so they have a spot set up, and they have a permit for those Wednesday concerts in the park, where they're down there and they can serve out of these social district cups the beverages and things that they normally would have, 8 or 10 different kinds, those types of things. So people that are enjoying the concerts, they can have a beverage if they want with a picnic or whatnot. And then that revenue goes to, you know, the Lions group. But then the city is also getting revenue off of that through these cups as well. And so that was something we sort of had prior to even the social district. We could operate those types of things under this special event. So this is kind of just a natural transition. Another thing that's going on is the food truck festival we have. It's had various names, but, you know, the Uptown Food Truck Festival, St. Paul, all these have this same group that does this. So what we did is, instead of it part of the special event license that we gave them to do that event and have a liquor license as part of that, they have to operate now, because they're in this district, with this, because it's a lot clearer for people. And so when they're selling things at the food trucks, when they're donating some of that revenue that they have as a special events ordinance to the city, to nonprofits, that's also a requirement we have to operate in public sphere. A certain amount has to go to these nonprofits. That's been helpful in order to kind of make sure the city gets some of those expenses covered, these local groups are made whole, and that businesses aren't just using the public sphere for their own benefit 100% and not giving back to the community.
Representative Hua, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got my answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I see no more member question. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Van Binsbergen would like to ask the mayor a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding the establishments that serve. Do they all agree on, you know, what they're going to serve and, like, what price they're going to offer that they're going to put this in their glass?
Yeah, so the way it basically works is we say, all right, you are allowed to have, you know, your licensed beverage within the cup. They can serve what they want in those cups, and they can charge whatever price they want. However, that surcharge, some of them will add the surcharge specifically on there and say 50-cent city surcharge. Some will just adjust the price of beverages. They've all kind of handled that differently, how they want to do that. But it's kind of up to them to price and to serve how they want to within the parameters of whatever the legislation says.
Follow-up, Rep. Vansbergen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you think most of them kind of establish kind of a base price of what they're doing this so they're all kind of in line with each other or not necessarily?
Well, I think you gave me a research project to do to go to 11 different places and see what they're charging, I guess. But to answer the question, they work really well with each other. We have a local group of people. They meet regularly, talk about stuff. I haven't been party to all of those individual conversations, but I'm sure there's a little variation. However, they also want to make sure they're competitive with each other. So Representative Stevenson has anything to add to this, he can.
As a frequent patron of the Social District, I'll tell you that there's a diversity of establishments in this area, right? So you have some high-end cocktail places, the hardware store. You should go to the hardware store. Great specialty cocktails. It's a little bit on the more expensive end of things, right, because you're getting that higher-end volume. On the other hand, we have some places are long-established bar restaurants. Serums, great wings at Serums. Go to Serum for their wings, but they also, you know, you can get a tap beer there for a relatively inexpensive amount of money. Then we have, there's a wine bar, there's a craft brewery. So there's a diversity of establishments. So the pricing varies because they're offering products that are pretty different from place to place.
Well, I would imagine.
Representative Van Berzien, follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you. Madam Chair, just a comment. I would imagine in the beginning there was probably some question marks between the establishments of, you know, like you said, the variations of places that serve. But overall, it seems like a really interesting concept. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Vansbergen?
No, thank you.
Okay. I know I'm slaughtering the name, sorry.
Hey, I'm new here. And I'm sure you'll figure it out soon.
We have another question from. Thank you. We have another question from Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, a couple of questions for you. When you say that they can serve the alcohol that they would normally serve, there's different types of licensure, right? There's a 3-2 license, there's a wine and beer license, there's the hard liquor license. I'm assuming that they are able to vend anything that's within the scope of what their license permits, their liquor license permits, is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Mayor?
I apologize. Thank you. That's correct. So as was said, the wine bar only basically has their wine beer license. That's what they're allowed to do. They now, I can see, have applied for a different license, a more expanded one. We haven't initiated that yet. But as the craft brewery as well, that's only what they're allowed to do. If you have a full liquor license, you can put cocktails in there, you can do wine, you can do beer, those types of things as well. So whatever your current license, we basically tried to make it as inexpensive and simple as we could to just say, this is just sort of a checkbox and a little extra fee if you want to go this other route as well.
Follow-up, Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mayor, the other question that I have has to do with, so you've got your social district established. Do you have any incidences or problems or occurrences with people coming to the social district, bringing their own alcohol that's not sold or vended in that district, because that may follow to your city ordinances as to whether or not public consumption of alcohol is, in public spaces is or is not permitted? I know that from, hate to say it, almost 40 years of community festival experience, I'm very familiar with a lot of ordinances, and some communities say, you know, on the street and the parades, that's great. Others say behind the right-of-way with alcohol on private property. So I'm just wondering if you're experiencing any folks coming in and bringing their own, and how's that working?
Mayor Skolgeski, I'm getting in this all. Skolquist, sorry about that.
Sorry, my name's not Smith. It makes it a little tricky.
No.
Scandinavian names, so.
It's perfect for the area.
Thank you. So to answer your question, that's always something that we're kind of have to deal with and on the lookout for. But that's something we've kind of had for a long time. And so that's part of one thing that we try to explain to people. You know, I've done my fair share of going out at midnight and sitting with the police that are out there just to kind of gauge what's going on. And a lot of it is reminders and saying, hey, you can't have these outside things. And so the way we've operated in the city of Anoka for quite a long time is you are allowed to bring a beverage, an alcoholic beverage, into a public park, and you can have it. So if people are having picnics or events, they can have their wine with it or come to the concert or whatnot. It's a little different now in this area because now that's Riverfront Park is part of the social district. That is not allowed to be something that is allowed in the district. The legislation specifically said you can't bring other beverages in during that. And so there's a little learning curve for people as that changed at those concerts in the park to say, you can still have stuff, but, you know, you need to purchase it through this. And so everybody that's out there, if you see somebody with something, it's a lot of times simple reminders to say, hey, you just need to do it through this so that it's, you know, it's regulated and we know what's going on. as far as, you know, any other instances, I don't think it's any more than anything that would have occurred prior. We haven't had an increase in that. And it's helped, I think, curb more of those issues because people know, you know, this is the proper way to do this now. And so that's been a little bit helpful. But that's something we're going to always continue to work on. And as you said, local festivals and events, people always want to kind of, you know, sneak something in while they're walking around. And so it's been mainly just reminders to people that this is how the rules are. And it's been a learning process, but it's moving in the right direction.
Follow-up, Representative Driscoll? Final,
thank you, Madam Chair. This will be my final on this particular topic. So how do you ensure or police, if you will, the transfer of the cup from someone of age when they were carded or ID verified in the establishment, and then it's out in the public space, the sidewalk, the streets, those kinds of things, that doesn't get transferred to someone under the legal drinking age? Do they get a wristband so that it's easily identified by as kind of a self-policing with the other vendors and the other participants in the program? Or how do you do that? Because that could be a potential issue, not maybe for Anoka, but as we're contemplating bringing this statewide, that we need to make sure, because not every community has maybe the same policing resources or participation or whatever that Anoka has and buy-in. Just kind of curious to see what your experience is and how you're policing and managing that.
Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good question, and that's something when we were dealing with this and talking to law enforcement, what's the best way to handle this? And so as of now, the way it's set up in here is we have the cups. We know how many cups are going to each establishment. And so part of it is on the servers of those places to make sure, obviously, they're serving the proper people. But as you stated, things could get transferred to other different folks. We haven't done a wristband situation because we haven't really had an issue that we've noticed. But I did have somebody bring that up to me because I remember if it was in Deadwood or Sturgis or one of those places, they have a similar situation where they do make people purchase wristbands. And so that was contemplated. We didn't implement that at this point. But that's one of the ways that we thought about if that becomes an issue that we've noticed, how are we going to handle that? And so as of now, it hasn't been, so we haven't gone that route. But I think always looking at other, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. This has been done in many communities in other states. Kind of finding best practices and talking with them, I think, is important. And if the state continues with this experiment and goes forward, then, you know, there probably is some things as part of this report that we have to write and send back to you. There's going to be things that we're talking about, pros, cons, things that potentially we would like changed in the legislation as well. And so I guess I would look to see what those recommendations are when that report comes here, and then you guys can make any determinations or changes that you think need to be mandated or if they're just something that we all need to know if we're going to be going forward with social districts in the future.
Representative, follow-up, Representative Driscoll.
Something you said, Mr. Mayor, spawned another question. Is there a limit on the amount that can be purchased in one? And when I walk up, it's like, hey, well, welcome. You know, what can we do for you today? I'd like 7 fill-in-the-blank drinks. Who's with you today? Oh, no one. And then I just want to, you know, can I borrow one of your trays and take it outside? And how do you control that it doesn't get into the hands of minors? Is it metered as it goes out, no more than X many at any one time of purchase? Or how does that work? Or how do you contemplate having to deal with that in the future? Because I hope that my comments today don't give people ideas in the city of Anoka about the various activities. But there are things, but we're, again, contemplating statewide that we have to kind of look at it. And we're using you as the petri dish, if you will, on this.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. There's nothing we put specifically in an ordinance related to that particular thing. What I've heard when I've talked to some of the different establishments is they've kind of, it's very similar policies that they might have, especially if you're a larger building or larger restaurant. You know, you're not going to buy 7 drinks and let somebody go. I've heard of a couple, you know, informally say, you know, we're not going to do more than 2 to any particular person or something like that. And so it's been kind of relied on the businesses that have these licenses to follow the rules and do their server trainings and things like that as well. And so That's definitely something that I think there's concern from that angle, because they don't want to be held liable for those particular problems and issues. And so we haven't put anything in an ordinance specific to that. We definitely could if we needed to. But right now it's been sort of a mixture of us enforcing and having those rules, and a lot of those bars and restaurants self-policing. And like was mentioned, every city's different. Ours are very good at working together and talking about it and trying to make sure they're all kind of going out of the same page, just so that everybody gets consistency throughout this.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Jesko? We have two more members, and then we'll try and get through the slides. Everyone seems to be enthralled with your presentation. So the next representative is Representative Kutiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here. I had a question, and I think it might be for Chair Stevenson. I'm not remembering correctly when we first passed this back in 2022, if the time limit, the seasonal situation, was something that we built into the legislation, or if that was a decision that ANOCA had made, just for what makes most sense for the city.
Mr. Mayor, Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Kutiza Watun, it's not in the legislation. It's a decision that the city made. They premiered it, as you might have heard, actually in the fall of 23, just for a month, and then just took some time off, talked to the people in the community about how that worked, and then rolled it out full-time last summer and then bringing it out. But I think the mayor can correct me that they're contemplating taking it year-round.
Yeah, if I could. So right now that is a kind of a local part of our local ordinances. We've had those discussions about that. Right now, I think for this coming year, we've decided not to change that. It's still a seasonal situation. But there's definitely been those discussions for when, as I said, the clarity of people understanding. So we have events a lot in the summer, but they're not all summer events. Halloween is one example that can go throughout the month of October. The initial thought when we started this was, you know, let's take it easy. Let's not have it in the events where we have 50,000 people or 80,000 people that it's hard to police. We have a pretty large Christmas tree lighting event that usually gets about 10,000 people that show up as well. Again, that's in December. And so we haven't had that. So that can cause some confusion as well, as people are saying, well, I was here a few months ago. Why can't I do this now? And so those are internal discussions we're continuing to look at. But as of now, we haven't changed that, but it's it's something we've definitely talked about. And as seasons change and things happen, you know, May 1st isn't always the kickoff to summer anymore. There's been plenty of nice Aprils where people want to go out and utilize this as well. So that's something that I appreciate was in the legislation, to give us a lot of flexibility to do it what works for our city. Because what works in Anoka with our events might be a lot different in Stillwater or Shakopee or any other place in the future.
Representative Kutiza Watun, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Please take it.
So that's great to hear. I was just kind of curious on that. And then I was slipping ahead in the packet, and I'm very intrigued to hear about the busker program. So I guess I'll sit on that. Somebody else maybe has a question, but I'm excited to ask a question about that.
Thank you, Representative Kutiza Watun. And Mr. Mayor, do you have any comments back to the rep?
If we could, I think, is it the next slide?
Let's take one more member. Sure. Representative Chaw, please ask your question.
Thank you, Chair. This is to the mayor. I guess I'm not familiar with public enforcement, so my question is around, you know, underage drinker getting a hold of this cup and then, you know, putting alcohol in and thinking that because they're holding a cup that they've been carded or something like that. So I guess my question is around public enforcement. How does that work? Can, you know, somebody holding a cup, the officer can just go up to them and say, hey, can I card you or something? Or I guess, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Representative. Madam Chair, if I could.
Mr. Mayor, please.
Yes. So to answer your question, yeah, local law enforcement, you know, we've done a few times where we've had observations where they're just out there kind of watching, and report back to the council. What are we seeing? First of all, are people walking out of establishments without these particular cups? And if they're violations, how will we handle that? But they are allowed to go out, and they can very much go up if they have a concern or if they have somebody they're not sure about. They could simply ask them as well and say, you know, where did you get this from? Can we make sure we see your ID? Those types of things. That's kind of within their purview of anything to be able to do. Like I said, I don't think we've had a ton of issues, but because we've had a lot of bar restaurants within this kind of entertainment zone for a long time, I think a lot of the officers are very very wise and understanding of how this works, and they can spot things and kind of be proactive with that. And that's how we've operated in our city. Like I said, other cities might do things a little bit differently, but for us, it seems like it's worked for the most part, and it's helped any issues that may maybe had prior, and we're moving in the right direction.
Representative Chaw, further follow-up?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have another rep that would like to ask a few questions. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seeing how everybody is jumping in and asking questions, I figured the one thing I haven't heard so far, and I was hoping you could expand on that, Mr. Mayor, is what's been the economic impact of what you've seen just through the start of this? And unless you were going to cover it later on in your presentation, I could also wait as well. So thank you.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Mayor,
if I could, maybe can we address that in just a couple slides where I have a related item as well?
And that was the last member to have questions, so let's move on to the slides, because I know Representative Cretiza Watun is very excited to see the busker program.
Okay, maybe
Mr. Mayor,
we'll try to address. There were some different things that happened through the questions, so let's go back, and I'll try to be very brief with some of these, but. This was one specific thing here. So this is just, you know, it's a lot of numbers, but it's just showing you the specific cup part, which is a very easily quantifiable thing where we have hard data on. So on this particular slide, it says we've sold a little over 39,000 cups to date. It shows 24,000 of the 16-ounce size, and then there's various other sizes as well. It shows this is specifically the cup revenue. So that's been over $18,000 in sales based on cups, $8,000 of which has gone towards the cup fees, just purchasing them, and the rest is a surcharge that goes into this particular fund. So each establishment's billed an additional 25 cents per cup to offset those costs. Generally, they're around 25 cents, maybe a little bit less per cup, and we're continually looking at trying to get those prices down as well. So that's one thing that we can utilize that to help buy those recycling bins to do extra cleanups, to do all those things that offset costs so they're not on the burden of the taxpayer. They're more of a user-associated fee. As far as other economic spillover, there's, you know, been a positive thing. We don't have hard data on all of those things, but as we talk to different bar and restaurants, you know, I've heard kind of anecdotally from some of them that are maybe close to on those concert days saying, you know, well, we doubled our sales today versus the day before, those types of things. So I think as part of this, we're going to continue to try to gather more data and see if we can provide that in the report to the committee here at some point. But overall, it has been, gone from being a situation where during the week it's a lot more quiet versus the weekends are busier. But Wednesdays when we have our particular concerts, those are the best night of the week for people now. And so we're trying to do things where it's not just the city implementing, but it's also private groups, trying to encourage that type of thing as well. And then the more life, the more activity it creates, it's really, you know, if you think of the term, it's a social district. What social things can be done in these areas? And this is just one of many tools that we've tried to use as a city to enhance that. So if we could go forward to the busker slide. So one thing that we've done as well is we've provided a situation to help with that. So a busker program, I think this was based, I want to say Minneapolis has something similar to this. Mm-hmm. But it's a permit where we have people can register. It doesn't cost them any money. It's just kind of a tracking tool and an organizational tool where a busker who is a musician, artist, some sort of folks like that will come. They can have one of these designated spaces once they get this permit from the city of Anoka. And they can, sit on the curb and play music, or they can do their various things. And so this particular map on here, there's certain spots in there with the little music notes where we tell people, say, if you get your busker permit, you can go out there during any of the time, display your permit, set up shop, let us know which one you're going to be at, and then people can play out there. And it's a fun atmosphere. Some of our licensed places have their own that they use, guy playing acoustic piano at the wine bar, acoustic guitar at the wine bar or something like that. But it's another way to get more activity and more life down there. One of the things that we're doing here this year is we're going to be doing a little bit more areas closed off on streets to be able to have more communal spaces for more picnic tables, more people playing bags and Jenga or other music. So trying to create more of that social environment in the public realm. And then all of that ends up helping with economic development and more places wanting to be involved and more businesses wanting to be down there. I'm not saying this is by the only thing, but we've had a lot of people that have want to be in downtown Anoka now, and there's very few vacancies, which is a lot different than maybe 10 years ago. So this is just part of many ways that we're kind of helping build that environment of that place people want to be, where there's activity and life going on. All right, next slide. And so just a few other things that we've done. There's different marketing ways that we've dealt with this. So City of Anoka, we have communication staff, among other things, duties they have. They're very good with social media, putting out press releases, contacting folks. And so we do press releases for the opening and the closing of the district, and we have events for those that attract numerous media outlets. As well, as I said, the signage just being around helps educate people of what's going on. We do a lot of social media, our website, keep things up to date. We're very fortunate in the City of Anoka to be part of a QCTV. It's a community access with us and three other cities. We kind of work together. They do a lot of highlight events on things as well. And so they help not only advertise the area, but that's just more public information to help people understand how this works, the do's and the don'ts and all of that. So as more cities continue to operate this and there's certain guidelines within the state, I think people will start to learn this a lot more. But right now we're doing a lot, as was said, we're kind of the guinea pig, and so we're doing a lot of education, a lot of kind of holding people's hands to say this is what we need to do. One other thing that we started to implement was simple things where we have the rules, very basic rules, that we print out and allow all the bar and restaurants to put out on their patio tables and things. So if people are sitting there, not wandering the district, but they just, I can understand what this is all about while I'm having my burger or I'm doing whatever. And so that's another helpful tool to just continue to educate people. You don't want to swamp them with signs or anything like that. But providing those opportunities for people to learn has been really helpful. Let's see, next slide. So just a few pictures of people. Sometimes these are at special events, sometimes they're not. A lot of different diverse groups of people that are coming and utilizing this. Everything from our food truck festivals, Halloween. There's things called Vintage Fest, where some of our antique stores put on, and they get out all the old clothes and records and those types of things where people can come. And so people, it's just another tool that we've used as an economic development tool to attract people to the city. I've talked to so many people that said, oh yeah, I'm really familiar with Anoka, but I haven't been here in 30 years. But now I've come back, and oh man, this is really an awesome place here. And so it's just a way for them to come back and to reintroduce themselves in a historic city that doesn't have stadiums, doesn't have all these other things to attract people. So this is a way to help us utilize what we have. So another slide here, getting into some of this. Just a fun little thing. So the Mrs. Roper pub crawl appeared in downtown Anoka unexpectedly one day. It's just a costume bar crawl where participants dress as Helen Roper from the 1970s sitcom Three's Company. So this crawl occurs in towns across the United States. And one of the interesting things is, hey, let's go to Anoka. Let's do this type of event. So it's not just, as I said, not just things that the city is trying to do or the local chamber, but a lot of other people driving economic development in the city by just bringing people and introducing them to our area. And with that, that is the end of the presentation that I have, but I'm ready to stand for any other questions anybody else may have regarding this, Madam Chair.
Do we have other questions? Representative, I'm going to get this right, Van, I had it written down too, Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
My question is for Representative Stevenson. Maybe I just kind of... And you maybe covered this in the beginning. The current law, how do other communities tap into something like this? You've talked about Stillwater. And
Representative, could you move your mic towards you a little bit more? It's hard to hear.
Okay, sorry. This question is for Representative Stevenson. You, in the beginning, maybe you've covered this, but I'm just curious about the current law and how it stands and how other communities, if they wanted to tap into this, they can do so, or can they? And how does that work?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. So the original law was passed as a special law that pertains only to the City of Anoka. In 24, We amended that law to allow Shakopee and Stillwater to develop social districts as well. So as it stands right now, only those three cities can have social district. They're specifically named in law. We routinely do small liquor things like that on a case-by-case basis. Moving forward, I think that we should take a more comprehensive approach. And I know a few members have introduced bills around social districts this year, some as one-offs. The chair has introduced a bill on taking social districts more broadly, and I just introduced a bill to do the same thing in a slightly different way. And you know, we've had some good conversations, Representative Perriman and I, about trying to find a path going forward that makes sense for a sort of statewide approach to this. As I said, I think given the success in Anoka, it is inevitable that we will have more social districts beyond the three that are currently authorized. How we move forward from here, I think, is a question that we should think seriously about. Number one, part of the reason, and the mayor just alluded to this, part of the reason why it has been successful in Anoka is because it's unique. And if social districts are everywhere, or if every community has one, it will lose some of its drawing power, and it won't work as well. I also think that then we need to be a little bit more concerned about, when we're thinking about some of the other community impacts that have been discussed, about, you know, do people walk out of the social district and are they carrying beers over here? Well, so like, if every community has a social district, the idea that you can just walk around with a beer in your hand is going to be a lot more ingrained into the sort of culture of Minnesota, and I think it'll be harder to have those clear lines. Where if you have a few places where it's the, you know, this is just something that happens in Anoka and Stillwater and Shakopee, and you know, a handful of other places around the state, it's a little more delineated. You know, so like if you go down to Tennessee, right? Like you go to Beale Street and you understand I can walk down the street with a beer, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to think that I can walk anywhere in Memphis or anywhere in Tennessee around. So we have to be thoughtful about how we do this, both to preserve the value of the idea and also to, you know, prevent some additional side effects. So the bill that I introduced allows any community to have a social district, provided it's at least 20 miles from another social district. So there's some buffer. That's one approach. And I'm actually not at all married to that approach. I just suggested it as a way to say, hey, let's have some limiting principle. You know, Representative Perriman and I had talked about another idea would be to say, we could say there's going to be X amount of social districts in the state of Minnesota. Pick a number. You could even divide it geographically. There's going to be so many in greater Minnesota, there's going to be so many in the metro, right? And then we could task an agency, I would suggest AGED, the Alcohol Gambling Enforcement Division, with handing out those licenses in sort of a competitive proposal. And we could even place parameters on it. We could say, you know, these social districts have worked well. So far, we placed them largely in historic downtowns, right? All three of those communities are smaller communities with historic downtowns. And I think that's a good workable place where we're trying to bring some energy. You know, I'm not sure if Stillwater needs a bunch of new energy, but anyway, you know, to a historic area, right? So we could say prioritize historic downtowns, prioritize communities that are not close to an existing social district as you're doing that. So you could put some parameters. Another approach would be to keep doing what we're doing is kind of, as a legislature, picking the places where these things are going to be. And I think, you know, my conversations with Chair O'Driscoll and Representative Herr and Representative Perriman, I think there's interest in having this discussion over the next few months and maybe coming back next year with a more comprehensive approach, which will have the benefit also of us having the report that the City of Anoka is going to issue in August.
Representative Van Binsbergen, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Representative Katiza Witun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad I waited to hear a little bit about the busker program. It sounds like a really fun way to encourage people who either reside in the community and want to showcase some of their talents, or folks from outside of the area. I think you said that they, once they have this free permit, they can just set up whenever works for them if a space is empty. In some of my past travels, there are certainly cities with booming busker programs, right? In the permit situation, I'm thinking of Boston, I'm thinking of London, and I'm curious, at this point, it's a part of the pilot program, and I wait to see the report, but I imagine with five spaces, we haven't had a ton of issue with competing buskers, trying to jostle over a favorite spot of theirs. And I'm just kind of curious if you foresee the popularity growing of that, how many licenses have maybe been issued up to this point, and how you imagine it continuing.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Great question. And so I think at this point we've issued, it was 25 or 26, I apologize, I don't have the exact number. Doesn't mean all of those are out at any given time, but that's how many are kind of authorized. And part of the reason for us doing this is because it happened organically. And what we were running into is one of the more popular performers in town went to a spot and somebody else was there. So he just moved to a different spot that probably couldn't handle 25 people standing around him, and they were spilling out into parking areas and traffic zones and things like that. So it was workable, it was fine, we figured it out, but this was one of the ways a little bit more to keep it more organized, to make sure that people are in the right spots and that we're not running into those particular issues. And it's a good problem to have, right? So this was kind of our approach of looking around other communities and how they do this. And so we're open to changes and whatnot. The other part is we want to make sure that as a city, if there is a particular issue with somebody, say, doing something profane or offensive or things that don't fall within the guise of what is deemed as an acceptable thing that we have here, as far as entertainment goes, then we can pull a permit and say that's just not authorized based on the criteria that we have. So far it hasn't been an issue, but I'm looking forward to seeing more and more of that grow. This was just created this last year. We didn't have that in our fall pilot. And so I think as more people understand this and know that that's an option, it's going to be more people, and it's a fun thing that adds, it's no added cost for us as a city to do, but it's a good way for us to just enhance the district.
Representative Katiza Watun.
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and I have visited the Social District. Shout out to Ambie Wine Bar. It's a great place to host your book club, if anyone is looking. And Minnesotans love to be outside year-round, so I guess going back to my initial question about the seasonal restrictions, I'm glad that there is that flexibility built into the law. Just a couple weeks ago, and it was 50 degrees, and a couple of the places where I visited over that time, they had like their outdoor heaters out. It was really lovely to sit kind of out just on a patio and enjoy that space. So I think it's a really exciting discussion to have and to think about how we continue to move forward in other communities. Thank you.
Next question is from Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to our Anoka, Team Anoka up here. I have a couple different questions. First is, I'm under the impression that Halloween is popular in Anoka. I saw that you ended the season at October 6th, and I'm wondering if you did that specifically because of the Halloween popularity. Like, did you have a conversation about saying, like, should we have this during our Halloween era?
Representative Stevenson or Mr. Mayor, who would like to take that question?
Sure. Yeah, and so Halloween is a little popular in Anoka. We've been doing it 105 years, and so part of that is we've had the longest Halloween celebration in the country. That's part of why we're the Halloween capital of the world. And so, yeah, there is a lot of events throughout the month of October, culminating our Grand Day Parade, which can have upwards of 100,000 people in town. And so one of the things I think when we originally talked about this was we wanted to understand how it operated, how it worked, and to regulate it as best we can. And so by doing October 6th, we have kind of, I'd mentioned one of our festivals called the Vintage Festival. That was kind of that when they do it, that was sort of our end of the year thing. But there's a lot of impromptu things that aren't necessarily city regulated event, like a zombie pub crawl the bars would put on, and people just show up and they, dress up in their stuff and they go around and wanting to make sure that it was easy. It's already difficult to make sure that we're enforcing laws and rules around that. And so with conversations with our local police department, it was determined, you know, let's not have that during all that right there. They got enough to deal with. And so I think that's where the conversations have to come up as we're doing this and saying, is it beneficial to keep that approach, or is that actually more difficult to enforce because the rules now are different than they were, you know, a couple weeks ago type of thing. So those are ongoing things that we need to kind of work out ourselves and understand as people get more educated on this, how we're going to deal with that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just would add for the community's benefit, you know, if you haven't been to the Anoka Halloween Parade, it's like 100,000 people in this community that, you know, its population year-round is 18,000, right? So that is an immense amount of people descending on downtown Anoka. There are 11 establishments in the social district. It would be, I think, an intense experience if the social district, and maybe someday you'll get there, the Halloween experience in Anoka is unique.
Sounds like a legislative field trip. Representative Finke.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I mean, I'm grateful to hear that, right? Because I've been accused of not being fun, right? And I'm a fun person, but I also am sober. And it does make me like this program, right? And then I think about it. It's like, okay, so do we expand it, and who gets to expand it, and who gets to have it where? Does St. Anthony, Maine get to have it on their stretch in Minneapolis? Are we keeping this to small communities that are looking for, like, economic benefit? Are we building towards a time in 10 years where we're a state with public drinking, right? We're just, like, everybody's going to say, we get to do this in our town. Those things make me very nervous. I think that a culture of public drinking is something that we want to avoid, but we don't really want to, you know, it sounds like this is working very well, and I wouldn't want to get in the way of having, I like the idea of strolling maybe through town with people can do that with their drink versus some of the issues that have come up in European cities who have public drinking laws. So I do really think that there is, a community like Battle Lake in the summer, right? Like, is this something we would want to do there because it has a sort of downtown and a beach area, or is that something we specifically wouldn't want to do because it has so many people and so many boats, for example? So there's just like these sort of tensions and what kind of community and what kind of time frame and how we would make sure it stays the thing we want it to be without it just becoming a public drinking state is a question, you know, what are the consequences of this in a decade that I really want us to think through.
Representative Stevenson or Mr. Mayor, would you like to answer that?
I would like to speak to that. I think you're exactly right, Representative Finke, that thinking about how this has worked and, you know, wanting to expand it without, one, destroying what has worked in Anoka, but two, not creating something very different. So when we initially did this, when we proposed this, people would say, are you trying to, like, create Bourbon Street in Anoka or, like, even Beale Street, which is a more raucous environment? That's not what's happening in Anoka. This is not Bourbon Street. It's a different environment, and that's not what we were trying to do, and I'm not sure that's what we want in any of these communities. And I think that there have been some proposals for expanded social districts that would become Bourbon Street, or, you know, not, and not in a good way. I mean, like, Bourbon Street can be fun, right? But there are some ideas out there about places to put social districts in Minnesota that I think would be very bad choices. And so I think that we should be very careful about how we expand this, recognizing that as parochial as I am, as much as I would love for Anoka to be the only social district in Minnesota forever and that you would all have to come to Anoka if you wanted to do this, I recognize there are going to be more, but we should be thoughtful about how we expand it.
Representative Finke, follow-up?
Yeah, just one final comment. Thank you, Chair. And I do want to say it's clear from this presentation and this conversation that Anoka has been very responsible about how you have done this, and I appreciate that, and I think the Halloween question kind of gets to that, right? Like, we don't want to have an influx of this without knowing what's going to happen, right? So it would just be my hope that every community would have the level of intentionality that clearly is being done in the pilot program. Thank you.
Representative Chaw.
Thank you. You know, I've met with a couple of events like Grand Old Days, the Hmong Freedom Festival, and I guess my question is pertaining to law enforcement, right? For your Halloween event with 100,000 people, what does it cost to police that?
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I don't have that exact number off the top of my head. It's a fair amount, but we have a kind of a, so the way that our Halloween event works, it's actually operated by a local nonprofit called Anoka Halloween Inc. That's been doing well. They've been doing things for many, many years. And so they're sort of, I would say they're like the Halloween booster chamber of commerce, just, you know, handling that. So that is primarily them running everything. We obviously, as a city, it's important to us and we're in a support role. So there are things that we do. We help purchase the use of porta potties. We obviously have more policing, those types of things. So that's a number I could probably always get back to you on to see what the total amount is. One other thing I'm going to do a shout out, though, is our law enforcement and our whole community, and I think in that whole north, northwest metro, is very good about working together and helping each other out. So we might not have, you know, obviously the police force to handle that much people coming in, but we'll talk to other agencies and we'll have people from, you know, from Blaine, from Crystal, from Elk River, from all these other communities around that will come and help us out. And so that helps mitigate some of our extra things. You know, we'll pay for some of those overtime things for other people to do, but we'll also do trade-offs. We have a law enforcement training center with an indoor range and training facility, and we'll jockey and trade and say, hey, we'll let you use X amount of hours if you can send three people to help us out with this particular event. So that's a way to help kind of mitigate those costs as well. But the specific number, I don't really know, because between Halloween covering many of those expenses themselves, and then the city doing some of these ancillary things, it's a fair amount of money, but very well worth it for us.
Representative Shaw, follow up.
So my understanding is that, is that an independent contract from the nonprofit to the city, or are you saying that the city is subsidizing some services for the event?
I would,
Mr.
say,
Mr. Mayor.
Excuse, thank you very much. To answer that, the way it is a lot of it is, you know, they're permitted with a license to operate and do many of those things. However, the city, as part of that, will say, okay, we'll do these other things for the event. We'll put out the porta potties. We'll have a certain amount of policing that, you know, it's not necessarily that the nonprofit is requiring that. It's just, as a city, that's something we've done for so many years that we're dealing with traffic control and other things in the city that we would have to do with a lot of other events. And so because we've done it for so many years, that's kind of just a built-in cost that we've dealt with as a city.
Representative Shaw, follow up.
Just one more question. How do you handle the parking? You know, having 100,000 people, do you have like special permit parking, designated area, carpooling, or how do you handle? And the reason why I'm asking this question, because the city of St. Paul can do a better job as you are doing in Anoka when it comes to these events, right? For example, St. Patrick's Day, Hmong Freedom Festival, you know, Grand Old Days. And so I'm really surprised or glad to hear that you, as the mayor of the city of Anoka, is providing resources and collaboration with your local nonprofits to promote these, you know, community events in Anoka. So I really appreciate that. So,
Mr. Mayor?
Sure. Yeah, we, you know, we do our best to try to organize. So we do have situations set up for, you know, this is the areas for parking that are available. Obviously, with that many people, it just, you know, I live two blocks from downtown Anoka. So a lot of, I would judge how successful an event is by how many cars are parked on the residential streets going back past my place. And so you'll, in a Halloween event where it's just that many people, I mean, people might have to walk a mile to get to and from. But we have a lot of public infrastructure. There's a lot of public parking lots, some municipal parking ramps that we have as well. Those get utilized. You know, we even have one a mile away at near our North Star station, which is a whole nother discussion everybody will have at some point. But there's a large ramp that was built as part of that that's not terribly far from downtown where people can park and, you know, provide shuttles maybe and those types of things to be able to kind of work collaboratively to organize the chaos that is out there sometimes.
Representative Shaw?
No further question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And we're going to go to our last member here, and we're kind of having our last call, if we can use that in the district. Lead her. We'd love to have you follow up there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to first say that I take great offense to Representative Cha's characterization of St. Paul. We do everything fantastically here, so I don't know what he's talking about. But just a couple of quick questions. I know we talk about the success of this program, but going back to your slide on the data and the information, so I'm just curious, when you're looking at the cups and the revenues, is it, you know, I mean, I always think about, because I worked in the private sector for many, many years, and we talk about when we create new programs, are we cannibalizing the current existing sales? Just curious as to if you know if this cup revenue, if this is new revenue that would have come in short of this program, or is this that it was cannibalizing the current liquor purchases already, and so now instead of having a liquor purchase within that establishment, they were just buying this cup instead. So is this new revenue, or is this cannibalization of the current liquor revenue?
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. So, it's hard to judge if somebody would have purchased the drink prior or not. But what I will say is it's not really cannibalizing, because what it's doing is the establishment, let's just take an example. Say they would have charged $5 for a beer. Now they charge $5.50. Mm-hmm. And so that 50 cents goes to the city to help cover the cost of the cup and then to go into this fund. So the bar is still getting their $5. And that's how, at least how most of them have operated. I mean, there might be a few of these where they're higher end establishments that maybe they eat that 50 cents or something like that. Some of them might eat 25 cents of it. But for the most part, they're still being, you know, charging what they need to charge based on this. One thing I've heard from many of them that it's nice, especially when you get more people. Now when somebody has a cup like this, they don't have to just sit in there and take up the space in the restaurant, especially if it's a smaller place. They can go outside. They can go to the park. They can, you know, if somebody doesn't like wine, but they like beer, well, they can get a beer at one place and wine at another and go somewhere else. And so it really hasn't been cannibalized, because it's similar people getting beverages. It's just basically, if anything, a little extra fee and allowing spaces to be freed up inside of those places.
A follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair. So I guess I think that it would be good for the city to figure out a way of really looking at, is this new revenue? Because I think when we talk about success of programs, success is when we're able to bring in new customers, new people, new sales. And I'm not confident that if when I look at these numbers, if this is actually new sales on top of what an establishment would have sold in liquor, or is this just now movement of those sales to different places? So, and I'm not saying this isn't successful. I would say that would actually be good data for you to sort of pull up so that you know. Also, maybe if there's no answers to this, we can, you know, maybe just take the information and follow up on it. But I think it would be a good way to try to also understand, like, your customer demographics. Like, where are they coming from, right? Is this people locally just now, you know, coming there and being able to walk around? Or did you actually draw people from different cities and different areas? And maybe the percentage of individuals who, you know, are being drawn from somewhere else where they might not have come there before, short of this social district, right? I think those are some really important data. And then I would also say that, too, maybe just partnering with, like, the tourism industry, because if this, you know, these are unique situations, it would be good to actually be able to promote, and maybe you're already doing that, but to maybe promote, to work with, like, you know, the tourism industry to try to bring people in to experience this. And so then they also do a very good job of collecting data of who is coming into these spaces. And so I think the more data we can have, the more people can understand, is this really going to be beneficial for us, or are we just redistributing the current liquor sales already? And then I would also say that if there's a way for you to track, like, repeat users versus a unique cup purchase. So, like, is it the same 100 people that always come because this is what they enjoy doing? Or are these, you know, these 39,150 cups, are they unique purchases of individuals who are coming for one time and coming for the experience? I think these are all, I think, really important data that we should collect if we want to look at true success of a program. And then I would say, I don't expect you to have answers to that, because there's a lot of really detailed questions, but for the next time when we do actually present in these bills and the changes, I would say, just to also for Representative Stevenson, is there a possibility for one-time permit for social districts? So, like, you know, Grand Ole Days might only want a social, Grand Avenue might only want one for Grand Ole Days or something like that. Is that something that we've also explored as a committee, is like a one-time event social district kind of permitting? So those are my questions on that page, and that was a lot, which is why I don't expect you to have answers today, but I think it is important for us to take that back to actually look at the true success of the programs. And I will just say also on the busker programs that, you know, I think this is something I'm very interested in, because the artist community often are looking for ways to promote themselves. And I would love to be able to just maybe have some more data around, are the artists, local artists to the Coon Rapids area, or are they drawing artists from across the state who live in closer areas so that they have a way of putting their information out there? I think that's also really important for us to sort of know, like, then what kind of talent are you drawing in, the diversity of the talent and where that talent is coming from. I would say that, you know, artists in rural Minnesota might have a harder time having their art be displayed, and this might be a good way to draw from people who don't always have that same exposure. So sorry, I asked a lot of questions and said a lot in one breath, but I also wanted to save us on time because there's already been a lot of questions asked today, and I would love to just have this brought back and some thought into it before this program comes back in front of us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lead Heard, thank you. It does bring up that this is a conversation we're going to continue to have, and there were a lot of questions there, and we look forward to your report. But I do have one more rep that would like to ask a question quickly, and I know she will make it quick. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just actually a follow-up from one of Representative Hurst's questions. I was looking at the different regulations on the tabletop boards, and it says that each drink will be served in a new cup. And I'm curious, and this is probably establishment to establishment, but like, have in your experience, do places say, like, you know, will you be staying with us, or do you want a walking cup? It feels, and this again connects to one of Representative O'Driscoll's questions, which was, could people get more of a sustainable cup that could be reused over and over, as opposed to, you know, somebody goes to, you know, a bunch of different places, and in terms of waste and sustainability, I'm curious on what your experience has been thus far.
Mr. Murray, or Representative Stevenson, would you like to respond?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So to answer your question, that's what we had at the start of it. That's definitely been a conversation about trying to be more sustainable and how we could operate that while continue to kind of regulate the different uses and whatnot. A lot of the places, bars and establishments, people will say, hey, can I get a to-go cup? Or they might ask if it's a nice day or there's an event, or is this for here to go? Those types of things as well. So a lot of them will just have a big stack of these sitting right there. And then people can make that as an option, and then they'll just do that before they ring it up so that surcharge is added in there. To answer, I know there was a lot of questions I don't have answers to on that particular one, the questions before, but what I'm just going to say is, anecdotally, I've talked to a lot of people that have come into the city that aren't from the area. Maybe they're not super far away, but we'll have some, you know, I'll have Minneapolis come up, or people say, oh, I came down from Zimmerman, or I was just, you know, coming through the area and I heard about this, I wanted to check it out.
Mr. Mayor, could you please wrap up a little bit?
Anyway, more to come, I guess, on some of those answers. I will make sure we try to track some of that data for you. Thank you.
Thank you. We're at closing time right now, and no pun again. But I am really looking forward to working with Representative Stevenson, making this bill right and good for Minnesota, making it special, and having monitoring curtails that it doesn't become a Beale Street as well. We don't want that. But I look forward to the path as we go forward. I have a feeling we may have this kind of gathering again, an informational piece. Look forward to your final report as you do recaps. Representative Stevenson, would you like to wrap up?
Just very briefly, come to Anoka. It's a great time. Check it out. I've given you a lot of establishments. There's many more, though, so we could talk. We could have a whole other hearing about all the other places I left out in Anoka.
Okay. Well, thank you to both of you, and Representative, the real chair, O'Driscoll, would like to wrap up, too.
Well, first of all, Representative Perriman, thank you for chairing today. You did an excellent job for your first outing. Much appreciated. Sometimes it can be difficult to wrangle in Representative Stevenson, as I can speak from past experience. You did a marvelous job on that this morning. Speaking of Representative Stevenson, can you please tell us the billing address we should send the commercial for Anoka that's been going on for the last hour and 20 minutes? In care of the mayor, probably, I'm not sure. No, I'm just giving you a bad time. Representative Finke, your comment on getting this right is 100% spot on. That's the reason why Representative Herr and I talked about wanting to do this hearing at this time, get ahead of this. Representative Stevenson and I talked about a bill, how are we going to do this? Because we need to get on top of it, because every community is going to want one. How do we manage this? How do we regulate this? We're learning, and that's our purpose for having the mayor here today. And again, with my thanks, Mr. Mayor, thank you for being here. You handle it like a pro. obviously you've been around public hearings before, so you handle it like a champ. So congratulations and thank you for your time and your insight this morning. The other thing that I want to mention to the body is we will most likely not be taking up issues specific in liquor to social districts. We wanted to have the conversation today, see where it goes. As has been stated, there'll be the report that's coming. Maybe there'll be some summer interim work on it. And then next year, we'll figure out what the right formula is to be able to apply that in the state of Minnesota so that we do get the best return for the investment in status or law change on this. In anticipation of a question that Representative Herr may have before we conclude today, what does the landscape for next week look like? I can give you a better indication on that after we get information on forecast. I can give you a better indication after your team and our team visit later this afternoon about what the lay of the land looks like and some of the things that we've been talking about. So we will have more information as the week progresses. And again, Representative Stevenson, thank you for helping us to organize this as well. Madam Chair, that's all I have.
And as Representative Driscoll will say, stay tuned. And our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 11th, and we are adjourned.